Maynard's, it's just east of Austin, Texas, so it's in central Texas. Small community, 6,500 citizens, 35 employees. We're very tiny, but we're doing some great things with technology.
But you've gotten some great attention recently. You were on the cover of Government Technology Magazine, which is great. Mm-hmm. And you are doing some really interesting things around crowdsourcing and reaching out to people in really innovative ways. How'd you come up with this idea, first off?
Well, it started with the QR code, and it's a quick response barcode. We started using it for document management. We were looking at a solution to really solve some of our internal problems with paperwork, but we didn't have the money to go out and buy a solution.
So I'm going to describe to people, this looks almost like almost a Rorschach test, I guess, a little bit. You look at it and you would say, this is nothing. What is this that I'm looking at? And we'll post to what it looks like on DuraVecInsider.com.
The great thing about that is you can read it with your cell phone.
Really?
And it's a great technology. It's an open technology. It's an old technology used overseas quite heavily. It's used in marketing now in the States, but we decided it'd be a great citizen engagement tool. And so what we did is, you know, traditionally, especially when it comes to projects, in a city, you put up a wooden sign that has, this is your bond money at work.
Right.
And it's not very engaging. The only people that read it are the two people that install the sign. So we wanted to do something that really added to it and that got people interested in what was going on in their community. So we started putting QR codes on projects and different items of interest in Manor. And so citizens could go and they could scan it with their phone and they could view more information about whatever they just scanned. And since you link to a website, the ones in the field are configured as hyperlinks to websites. So you can always update the information. So if the project changes or the scope changes, you can update it and the people get the information as they scan.
Wow. The other thing you're really known for, and you were here in Washington talking about, tell me what Manor Labs is.
So it's an open innovation platform powered by Spigot, which is a software company out of Pleasanton, California. And what is interesting about the platform is we crowdsource all the research and development for our agency. As I mentioned before, we only have 35 employees, so there's not a lot we can do internally. So we wanted to crowdsource those components. We have a very educated population base, a lot of people.
Austin, very smart place. You have a lot of universities around the
That's
area,
right.
And Dell's there, so
Samsung,
you have smart people.
Materials. That's right. And so we wanted to do something that really leveraged the people that we had in our community and allowed anyone to participate, even those that didn't live in Manor, and helping us come up with some good solutions for our citizens. And so we crowdsourced everything, and we launched Manor Labs in conjunction with Stanford University on October 27th of last year.
So walk us through, what is it, a website?
Yes, it's a web portal, and it allows anyone to submit ideas for the city of Manor. And the great thing about it is the ideas are vetted on by the participants of the platform. And it's an automated process. Traditionally, idea platforms, you only rate, you know, ideas by a vote up or a vote down. And that doesn't really do anything. You just have, you know, the priority of what the best ideas are. But we want to develop ideas. We want to take the legwork off the city employees and actually crowdsource that as well. And so our platform is automated. So someone submits an idea. Very easy to do, and it's voted on. It's got to have so many page views, so many comments, so much buzz associated with the idea. And once it meets that criteria, it will automatically graduate to the next stage. And once it's in that stage, the city actually reviews the idea. A department head will review the idea and determine whether they have enough information to proceed. If they don't, they'll send it back and tell the citizen, I need more information. Typically, it's around cost. I need information about how we're going to pay for this idea mid-budget year. But if they do have enough information, then they'll advance it to the next stage. And once it's in the next stage, we'll determine whether we can pilot it, whether it's something we have to buy, whether it's something we can partner with a company or a higher education institution to do. And then once
I guess, can you even afford to do it?
That's right. That's the big question. So, and then ultimately, we decide whether to implement it or to abort it. And if it's aborted, we have to give the citizen or the participant a reason why we could not implement the idea. And it's a transparent response. So typically, cost is a big factor. We'll say, unfortunately, at this time, the city of Manor doesn't have the financial resources to do this, and maybe give them some helpful advice about applying for grants or other items of interest to pay for the idea in the future. And if it's implemented, we reward the citizen. And that's the interesting thing about the platform. We use
reward the citizen, meaning
we use game mechanics as a way to empower people to participate, because we know that the only way to have a sustainable platform is to give someone a tangible benefit to participate. Asking people to go and to submit ideas for an agency is not sustainable. They may do it the first year because
right.
The hype is real,
because it's cool. It's a cool
right.
thing to do.
But year two comes around and no one's going to do it. They have to have a reason to participate. You look at the models of engagement like Foursquare and Gowalla. It's like, why would someone check in on Foursquare at Starbucks? Well, now Starbucks, whoever's mayor of Starbucks, will get a discount on their coffee. They get a tangible benefit to participate. And so we've taken those same mechanics and we've applied them to open innovation within government. And we reward people in what we call InnoBucks, which is a virtual currency on the platform, in set amounts based on what they do. So if you submit an idea, it's 5,000 Inno bucks. If you vote on an idea, it's 150 Inno bucks. But if your idea is implemented, it's 300,000 Inno bucks. And so you have all this virtual currency, but you can actually trade it in for real tangible products that have been donated, and then the honorary type things that we can give out as a city, like you can be mayor for a day, or you can have a ride out with the chief of police, or I think we should add on there, you can be assistant city manager and chief information officer for the day too. That'd be a great one. But people always have a perceived tangible benefit to participating on the platform, which keeps them engaged and keeps them, you know, in a participatory mode.
How many people have actually participated, and how did you reach out to them? I mean, I think that's often the people build it and then just expect everyone's going to come.
That's
and
right. Education's key, and that's one of the things in Gov 2.0 that's really lacking, because you have to educate people on how these tools are really important, and you have to show them that they actually add value to the citizens as a whole, and it's not just a PR stunt. So what we did is we launched a series of articles in our local newspaper. We went out and spoke at various civic organizations to tell people we're listening, submit their ideas. And then when we started implementing ideas off the platform, they started realizing, hey, Maynard is actually listening to what we have to say. They're turning these ideas that we have, and they're helping us develop solutions out of them. So it was a really, really good thing for us. And people saw that, you know, Maynard was really trying to listen and harness their voice.
And one would guess that that starts to build on itself. And as somebody finds that, hey, their project was heard, even if it wasn't implemented, at least they don't feel as alienated as
they
did.
Yeah, we engage. I mean, using, you know, Web 2.0 technologies, you're able to have dialogue with citizens that was never possible before. And the great thing about the platform is the dialogue is all transparent. So if someone has the same idea and they see that we've already tried it, they'll learn from that try and see how they can improve on that idea the next time they try to submit it.
And how many ideas have you actually run through this run through the system? And give us an example of one or two that were really interesting that maybe you wouldn't have thought of if you hadn't had this kind of system.
There's about 80 ideas that are in the queue at
this point
in time. We've implemented 6 ideas off the platform, and one of our most notable ones is we had a citizen suggest that we have a work order system that had an RSS feed for, you know, potholes and other items of interest. And it was something that we had never thought of. And we thought, you know, let's look into this a little bit further and see how we could do it. We were paying quite a large amount of money to have a, you know, standard work order system that most cities use. It really isn't, you know, a very effective system. So we found C-Click Fix out of it. And brought the citizen in to the dialogue and allowed them to participate with it. And we launched C-Click Fix as our primary work order system.
I love the name of it.
Yeah, it's a great... Are you familiar with C-Click Fix?
No.
So it's kind of like Fix My Street in the UK. And essentially, it lets any citizen report issues using their mobile phone or using traditional means of communication like a 1-800 number. And they can report issues. And it goes directly to the employees that are out in the field via email delivery. And they can get it and they can respond to it, fix it. And then it emails the citizen back and says, your issue's been fixed. And if it's something that takes a little bit more work, like a, you know, humongous pothole that we don't have the funds to do, it allows citizens to say, I want that fixed too. So you can elevate the need for that particular pothole to be fixed. And so we can see that, you know, this pothole has 15 people that want it fixed, and this one has 150 people that want it fixed. So
and again, that visibility into people can see whether it's been reported, what the status, whether it's been fixed or not.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's been a very powerful platform. I mean, the great thing about it is it's very inexpensive for cities to use. We pay $38 a month for it, which is nothing for a city to use a platform. And it brings up, you know, a good point about Gov 2.0 in general, because a lot of people, C-Click Fix is a tool that was created to get government to move. And a lot of agencies have tried to figure out how to keep C-Click Fix from having issues reported for their cities. And Maynard has the opposite approach. Why put our resources in blocking these tools that can really help us? Why not see how we can embrace them and allow and leverage them to really have some positive change? And it's been amazing for us. I mean, there's mobile apps that our citizens can use, and they can report a variety of issues, and it allows us to filter them out by who it needs to go to. If it's a street light that's out, we can direct it to the appropriate party versus a pothole that's out.
You didn't have people who, even within city government, and I'm going to talk to your city manager, Phil Tatum, in just a minute about this, but you didn't have people who went, oh my goodness, what are we, we're allowing citizens to tell us what we have to fix, or we can't put this stuff out there.
Well, we found that just like with our open innovation platform, that empowering the citizens and allowing them to have a voice really was a proactive thing that we could do. Citizens were reporting issues that we had to drive around and find ourselves. So it put them in the driver's seat and allowed them to take responsibility for their community. The city of Manor still has ultimate say on what we fix and when we fix it, but it's a way that we're held accountable for our actions. And it's a way that we can see also at a top level how effective we are as a city and how effective we are at engaging our citizens.
Phil Tate is the city manager for the city of Manor. And when these ideas first, I'm not breaking any rules, you're not quite as young as he is.
Within 40 years.
There you go. That's right. We're all in the same ballpark. When you first heard these ideas come out, was it kind of interesting or was it, oh my goodness, what in the world are we doing?
No, because really it was really interesting only because they didn't just all come at one time. We evolved from one to the other, started with base platform of bringing our systems together, like our accounting system and all. And once we got that done, then came the QR codes, and it's just kind of evolved from that point. So one at a time, we've been able to address these things and bring them into the system, and the more we do, the more exciting it becomes.
And so you waded into the pool. You didn't jump in right into the deep end.
That's right.
What were some of those early steps? Because a lot of federal agencies, much bigger, they're not small and agile like you guys can be, and they go, okay, I don't even know where to start. How did you start down this path?
Well, with the QR code,
we just did it,
and we did it on a very small scale. Our initial cost on that on our QR codes, and it was putting them at the historical sites and that type of thing, cost us $400. And we did it kind of as an experiment. And then the council realized how the value we were getting out of it, and we expanded it. We have 28 signs, roughly that number,
and throughout every the town city now. Vehicle.
And they're on all the city vehicles. And from that point, then we began getting contacts internationally from that work. And ideas started coming to us through Dustin. And obviously, he understands what's going on technologically, where I don't pick up on all that stuff. And just one after another, we've seen it grow into a really unique thing in the Austin area. And Austin, being noted for technology, has actually comes to us and asks us questions. And
that's great.
It's a great deal.
And it seems like one of these things that my sense of a lot of government workers at the federal level is we've been trying things for a long time and we keep trying the same thing over and over again and getting the same result, which isn't necessarily what we want. And yet people are sort of, if we actually open this up and do involve people, oh my goodness, that's a little scary too. That's very different from the model that we've had. And how do you work people through that? Did you have to almost confront those kinds of issues?
Well, you do in two senses. There's a lot of employees that do not understand technology, and you have to work.
And
you
scared
of it, and you have to educate them on how the technology works. But you also have to start small, and we have Dustin has a line he uses a lot. You have to be open to openness, and our council was open to openness, and so it really has been an asset to us as opposed to a liability to us.
And that's the other question I wanted to ask you about was the political role of this. And it's a council? Do you have a council? Is that what it is?
Yes, we have a 7-member council, including the mayor.
How did they react when you started doing this? Did they go, oh my goodness, what are we doing? Or were they just say, hey, let's try it?
More on the latter. They did. Obviously, a lot of them they range in age from the low 30s on up, but most of them kind of took it with a grain of salt and said, well, let's try it and see how it works. But they've been very responsive and very cooperative with us and have not turned down a single project yet. We give them a report every month trying to keep them informed on what's going on. And sometimes they
can check the site, can't they?
Yeah, and sometimes they follow it very closely, and sometimes they kind of look starry-eyed like I do. So, but they're all very cooperative, every single one.
One of the other real fears, I think, is that all of a sudden, if this is all out there and open, it really changes, can flatten the traditional hierarchical management structure. And all of a sudden, if I'm a manager, I can be losing that control that I've had for so long. Have you found that it's changed how you manage at all?
Well, yeah, we, of course, being small like we are, we didn't have that structure in place quite as dramatically as even the state or our larger cities. So that really hasn't impacted us quite like other cities might be impacted. But if you'll start small within a department and expand it and let your employees grab it, take and run with the ball for a while and see which way you need to go with it, it doesn't affect your man. If anything, it relieves a lot of time and stress on all areas of the operation, not just on the management. And we've seen it in our utility department, just in our billing systems, how much easier it is and how much less employee time is involved in doing the billings just because we've kind of modernized that type of thing.
I love your phrase, be open to openness. How do you convince people? How did you, as you were going around and trying to proselytize this, be the Pied Piper of openness, how did you convince people that, you know, it's not, I exaggerate and say the end of the world, but some people feel it's not that far from this.
That's right. Education's key again, and showing the value that they receive out of it. There's a lot of misconceptions with openness that people fear that, you know, it's going to create all these problems. And what happens if we have an informed public that has, you know, the access to all of this data? And, you know, we always look at the glass half empty, and we never look at what happens if they have the information and they use it to our benefit. And so Maynard's taking the approach to be optimistic about the situation. And I always try to show value to our council members.
But that seems like a mindset that starts with you guys.
That's right.
And that's a difficult mindset. I mean, you guys had to have that open. You had to be open to openness,
right,
and say, hey, let's try it. And we can always pull it back, but to try it.
That's right. And it starts in the mind. I mean, if a city goes out and puts up a Twitter feed or a Facebook page and they're really not open to being open, so to speak,
right,
it does them no good to do that. It's just a, you know, public relations thing. If they really want to use these tools effectively, they have to know what their purpose is. They have to figure that out up front and know how they're going to get value out of it. And so everything that we do, we always have a strategic plan on how are we going to get value out of this? How are we going to add value to our citizens? And how is this going to help our communication channel between citizens and government? So having that plan in place beforehand always makes these tools much easier to use.
And I always ask the question, okay, how is this helping you get your job done better? If it doesn't do that, then probably don't do it, because then it's just it's window dressing, but it's not going to stick around.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Give lessons learned to folks who are our audience. They're in big agencies with thousands of people, and they'd love to be able to do what you've done on a very small scale. I always tell them, you can go do it.
That's right. So starting small is the key. There's
right.
A lot of big agencies and a lot of big cities that always say that we're too big to innovate.
Yeah.
And I've heard that with a number of them.
Drives me insane when they say
it
that.
It does.
Yeah.
And you're never too big to innovate. You're just thinking too big. You have to start small. And employees are very motivated by being able to go out and innovate and find out how these new tools can be leveraged to make agencies more effective. So as a manager, assign one person, you know, to go out, even if it's on their free time, they'll do it, and discover what's out there. What is the private sector doing that government can model? How can we embrace some of these tools effectively to get the job done? What you'll find is you'll take a workforce that's very unmotivated and that is stuck with these tools, these legacy systems, and all these old technologies that are very motivated all of a sudden that, wow, we may be able to get some cutting-edge piece of technology in here that will reshape how we interact and how we do business. So starting small is key. A mindset is another key thing. And I wouldn't be deterred by management that shuts it down, because you have to continue to press forward. Even if you have to do it on your own and research how these technologies work. I met a guy from California that, you know, he's continually being shut down by his boss, and he was so frustrated. And I said, just keep pressing forward. Show your boss, educate your boss on how this can be used to effectively, you know, reshape your department. And if you're a manager of a cubicle bay, start it in your cubicle bay internally. I mean, it's just a small thing. It's bottoms-up innovation. You can't expect a large federal agency to immediately, you know, turn over an open innovation platform overnight. It's got to be small incremental steps that are phased, especially in an agency that large. We believe the movement's going to take root in cities across the country, which we're starting to see now. San Francisco is doing some amazing things with Data SF and some other really cool projects. And then it's going to grow into the state level. And then hopefully from that, the federal government will then see the value of a lot of these open technologies. But there has to be a plan. It has to be, you know, this has got to start small, and you can't be deterred by, you know, failures. We've had a lot of things that we've learned from. We had an in-car computer prototype that was a thin client. that reduce the cost of in-car computing by about 70%.
So you just use a whole bunch of words that all of our non-techie people are going, I know what each of those words mean independently. He put them all together and I don't have a clue.
So
essentially, in the cars, in your vehicles, they had computers.
They had it was a cloud-based computer in their car. And it took the Toughbook that everyone uses and cut the cost astronomically and made it much more efficient.
Thin client meaning you don't have, it's not this big desktop or even a big laptop that has a big, everything is in
it. It's basically a gateway to your server.
Yeah.
So we put that in the car, and it was an amazing success from the city's part, but it was shut down by our county and by ultimately the city of Austin because we used them for dispatch. And so, you know, we could have been deterred by that and said, we're not going to try to innovate anymore. We're not going to try to make any products. And we said, you know what? We've learned from that. We're going to continue to press forward. We're going to do other amazing things. And that was actually before the QR code and everything else. It's just the mindset of we can't stand for the status quo. We can't say, well, it works most of the time, so we're going to just continue to operate as normal. We have to look at how we can leverage these tools that are out there, a lot of them that are free, to really do some amazing things within government. We can always do a job more effectively and more transparent. We just have to leverage those tools.
And the remarkable thing about this place in time and history that we are is you do have these three factors coming up, this technology that all of a sudden people can go and do things. And if you are deterred by some boss, you go and do it at home. You probably have better computers at home than you do at work anyway. Also, people like you, these young people who you probably don't even remember phones with cords, for goodness sakes. And so these people think differently. They think differently than we do.
They absolutely do.
Let me ask you, for your lessons learned, what have you learned in this process of rolling these things out, this mindset change, having the mindset that, we're going to try it, seems like one of the really big things that has to happen.
It absolutely has to. You go through their airports, I'm amazed. I go through their airports and I watch all these people. They're on their cell phones. They're communicating variously with a cell phone. I think the day of the computer, this may be a broad overstatement, or the desktop, is pretty much over.
Yeah.
These people are operating in airports and doing all their business in airports, and the cities are going to have to evolve to that. Whether we're pushed to do that, or whether we're pulled to do that, or whether we fail to do it and sit back and become a real regressive in our thinking.
But one of the things that at least happens on the federal level is it's so risk averse because, goodness gracious, if you end up on the front page of the Washington Post or New York Times or on the, what's the Mainer newspaper?
Mainer Messenger.
If you end up on the front page of the Mainer Messenger, you know, you're going to be in big trouble and everyone's going to say, look, the government can't get anything done. It takes some leadership to really almost give people a little bit of umbrella to say, hey, we're going to try some new things. Not everything's going to work. We're wading into the water. We're thinking about how we do this. That takes some real leadership.
And one of the things we have found, and it really surprised us, is that some of our employees who are least qualified to or at least technologically advanced are giving us ideas through this mechanism, and we've actually implemented one of their ideas. In fact, it's one of the first ones we did, and so it's a very it kind of stunned us that the mechanism actually works. It gives us a way. And we're seeing other cities contact us that are implementing these ideas. Long Beach, Washington, installed
QR codes. But I think the point is what Mainer's trying to do is set the stage saying that we want to be an inspiration. We want to show other cities. I mean, Mainer 5 years ago didn't even own a server. And we want to show them that you can do all these things. We're not just a coincidence. We're not a freak of nature. Everything that we've done can be replicated and can be cookie cut to smaller cities that are really going to start this powerful movement. And the only reason why it really started in Mainer is it was a need to survive. We had no budget funds to really do anything. It was either we had to finance technology, which doesn't make sense because anytime you finance something that's going to be obsolete in 2 years, it's not economical. So we decided, you know what, we're not going to just stand for that normal thing. You know, we're not going to issue bonds. We're not going to do that. We're going to do something, and we're going to try to be, you know, we're going to try to make something that really makes a difference for other communities. And it was a bigger picture mindset. And so what we've done, we've cookie cut to other communities across the country to show them that they can do the same thing there. And that's why we're here in Washington. We want to inspire people to see that what we did in Mainer can be replicated. Even if it's not in a federal agency, it can be replicated in a cubicle bay. A manager can direct his employees and empower them and engage them in ways that, you know, is amazing to an agency, and that really creates a positive, innovative thing. And we've taken lessons from the private sector. We both came out of the private sector in banking. and applied them within government, saying that we can do cool things in government, too. It can be fun to work for the government, and you can be cutting edge in government. And the status quo is not acceptable to us in Maynard, Texas, and so we're going to show that there's another way to do it.
I was talking to Nicholas Gruen, who's the head of the Australian Gov 2.0 Task Force, and they're rolling this stuff out. And it's interesting to look at it from a large world scale. And one of the things in their report is he says these tools are all of a sudden giving public servants a new a breath of life into what they do, and are really saying, oh, hold on. I mean, if you become a public servant, you want to make a difference. You don't just do that on a whim. And all of a sudden they're going, oh my goodness, I can have impact. Mm-hmm. And do you find that in, I mean, I'm guessing you've been doing this for a year or two.
Well, yeah, we've been doing it for a couple of years now, and it has impacted us in every phase of the operation of the city.